How was it?
Agon spoke to Captain Arturian as they walked through the halls of the castle toward the maw.
It was awful. Absolutely awful, sir. I'd say it ranks with the worst things I've ever done.
Regrets, Captain? They say he killed one of your men.
If I may be blunt, he rid me of a fool that I couldn't kick out because the man's sister is a baroness. The idiot had it coming. I know it's not my place to say, Lord General, but you didn't see Logan's face. He's not guilty. I'd swear it.
I know. And I'm going to do everything I can to save him.
They passed the guards who held the underground gate that separated the tunnels beneath the castle from those of the maw. The nobles' cells were on the first level. They were small, but in relative terms, luxurious. Agon had Aline placed in one of these cells, though her status didn't afford it. He couldn't bear to have her put any lower, and if the king asked, he'd say that he wanted her kept close for further questioning. Agon stopped outside Logan's cell.
Vin, does he know about his family yet?
No. I'd already lost one man, sir. I didn't know what he would do if we told him.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
It wasn't going to be fun to tell a man who'd been jailed for a murder he didn't commit that his family had been slaughtered. But it was Aegon's duty. He always did his duty. Before he unlocked the door, Agon knocked as if he were coming for a visit, as if they were anywhere else besides the maw. There was no response. The nobles' cells were 10 feet square, all rock polished smooth to prevent suicides. Each had a bare rock bench that served as a bed, and fresh straw was brought in every week. It was luxury only compared to the rest of the maw, and even with fresh straw, nothing could erase the rotten egg stench or the ripe tang of massed humanity in an enclosed space that wafted up from the rest of the cells. Logan looked oblivious. He looked like hell. Tears streamed down his bruised face. He looked up when Agon came in, but his eyes took a long time to focus. He looked lost. His big shoulders slouched, big hands open on his lap, hair askew. He wasn't alone. The queen was seated beside him, holding one of those limply open hands as one would hold a child's.
Bless the woman. She'd come to tell him herself.
King Alain IX had totally missed with Nalia Wesseros. Nalia could have been one of his greatest allies. What a queen she would have made for Regnus Gyre. Instead, she'd accepted being pushed to the fringes of Elaine's scenario, even welcomed it, and had done everything she could to mother her 4, now 3, children. Agon had long suspected that the children were all that kept her alive.
My queen, my lord.
Pardon me if I don't rise.
None necessary.
They say that my father is dead too. Or they say that he did it. That the king sent men to arrest him for killing my mother. What happened?
As far as I know, your father is alive. He arrived with only 1 or 2 men. He was attacked outside the city. Someone was trying to wipe out all the Gyres but you. Men were sent to arrest him, but not on the king's orders. I haven't found out who did give the orders. Not yet. Those men either fled the city or they joined your father. I don't know which.
Lord General, I didn't kill Alain. He was my friend. Even if he did what they say he did.
We know. We, the Queen and I, don't think you did it.
He talked to me last night, you know. He knew I was going to propose to Sarah. He tried to persuade me not to. He reminded me of the rumors about Sarah getting around. He had this crazy idea that I marry Janine. I thought it was strange, but that he was being magnanimous. It wasn't magnanimity. It was guilt. Damn him!
Logan looked at the queen.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't talk this way, but I am so, so angry. And I feel so guilty for it at the same time. I would have forgiven them, Your Majesty. I would have... Gods, why didn't they just tell me? They say Kyla did it. At Count Drake's, I saw him move. He was fast. Too fast. But are you sure?
Gods.
The boy had just been betrayed by his fiancée and the prince. Now he wanted to know if he'd been betrayed by his best friend as well.
Agon didn't know if he would survive it.
And he needed him to survive. But Logan deserved the truth.
It wasn't in Agon to give him less.
I'm sure Kylo was upstairs when Aileen died. I'm sure he's a wet boy. I doubt his real name is Kylo or that he's a Stern. But I won't know that for 2 weeks. We've sent a rider to their estate, but it's a week's ride each way. I can't put everything together in any other way, son, and I've been trying.
Your being here is a kindness. And I don't want to take that away from you, but I'm guessing that you want something from me, or you wouldn't both have come here. Not now. Not so soon.
The Queen and the Lord General looked at each other. Something passed between them.
You're right, Logan. The truth is, the kingdom's in peril. I wish that we could be sensitive to your grief. You know that your father is one of my dearest friends, and what happened to your house is more than a tragedy. It's a monstrosity. But we have to ask you to put your feelings aside for a time. We don't know how bad the threat is, but I believe that it's dire. When the king decided to get rid of your father one way or another 10 years ago, it was I who suggested Screaming Winds. I knew that your father would make the garrison there a real stronghold, and I believed that Kalidor would invade sooner or later. Perhaps because he did such an excellent job, that invasion hasn't come. Most people want to believe that it won't come, because they know that if the might of Kalidor marches, we don't stand a chance. I believe that the prince, your mother, and your servants were the first casualties in a war. A new kind of war that uses assassins instead of armies to gain its will. We can stop armies. We've been preparing for that. Assassins are a different story.
Begging the Queen's pardon. Why should I care if the King's head rolls? He's been no friend to the Gaius.
A fair question. On a personal level, you should care because if the King dies, you'll either stay in prison forever or you'll be killed. On a national level, if the King dies, there will be civil war. Troops will be called back to the respective houses to which they are loyal, and Kalidor's armies will pour over our borders. Even united, our country couldn't stand against Kalidor's might. Our only strategy has been to make it so costly to take us that the price would be too high. With our armies scattered, we'd be defenseless.
So you think an assassination attempt is coming?
Within days. But Kalidor's plans rest on certain assumptions, Logan. So far, they've been valid assumptions. They knew that you would be arrested. No doubt they've already planted rumors to stir up the people against the king, suggesting that everything that's happened has been his fault or his plan. We have to do something beyond anything Kalidor has considered.
And what's that?
Kalidor has hired Hugh Gibbet, perhaps the best wet boy in the city. If he wants to kill Elaine, he probably can. The best way to save the king's life is if the taking of it won't gain Kalidor anything. Maybe it's the only way. We have to assure the line of succession. In a time of peace, or if she were older, Janine might take the throne, or I might. But now, that simply wouldn't be possible. Some of the houses would refuse to follow a woman into war.
Well, what are you supposed to do? Have another son?
Sort of.
We need someone who's popular enough to win the people's trust back to the throne, and whose claim to the crown would be beyond dispute.
Logan looked at him, and sudden understanding washed over him. Emotions warred on his face.
You don't know what you're asking.
Yes, I do, Logan. Has your father ever spoken of me?
Only in terms of highest praise, Your Majesty.
Your father and I were betrothed, Logan. For 10 years, we knew we were going to marry. We fell in love. We named the children we would someday have. The king was dying without heirs, and our marriage was to have secured the throne for House Gaia. Then my father betrayed Regnus and broke his word to your grandfather by marrying me in secret to Elaine Gunda. There were only enough witnesses present to ensure the legality of the marriage. I wasn't even allowed to send a message to your father beforehand. The king lived for another 14 years, long enough for me to have children, long enough for your father to marry and have you. Long enough for your father to take control of House Gaia. Long enough for House Gunda to fabricate some ridiculous history that supposedly gave Alayne the right to be called Alayne the Ninth, as if he were a legitimate king. When King Daven died, your father could have gone to war to take the throne. He could have won it, but he didn't. For my sake, and for the sake of my children. I was sold into a marriage I despised, Logan, to a man I never loved, and for whom I could never make love grow in my breast. I know what it is to be sold for politics. I even know my literal price and the lands and titles of my family secured after the king's death. I still love your father, Logan. We've barely spoken in 25 years. He had to marry a Grayson after I married a Gunda, just to keep House Gaia from becoming isolated and wiped out like the McKells were. He accepted a marriage that I've heard had little love in it. So if you think it pleases me to do to you what was done to me, you couldn't be more mistaken.
Logan's father had never spoken of such things. But his mother, it was suddenly so clear. His mother had been reminding Regnus of it for years. Her sidelong comments, her constant suspicions that Regnus had other lovers, though Logan knew he hadn't. His father's angry remark once that there was only one woman she had any right to envy.
I have hope that the marriage will not be the agony mine has been.
Your Majesty, words can't express the fury I feel towards Sarah. But I gave her father my word that I would marry her.
The king can legally dissolve such bonds for the good of the realm.
The king can't dissolve my honor. I swore. And damn it, I still love Sarah. I still love her. Oh, it's all play acting, isn't it?
This play acting gets us through a crisis, son. And it keeps your family from being destroyed. You have to stay alive if you want that to happen. It also happens to save you from disgrace and prison, even if we're wrong about the plot.
Logan, it isn't play acting, but we've convinced the king that it is. He is a despicable man. And if it's up to him, he will never let Regnus's son take the throne.
Your Majesty, Logan doesn't need...
No, Brandt. A person ought to know what they're being asked to give. My hope has been my children, Logan, and I lay Alayne's death at my husband's feet. If he'd not gotten involved with that Jadwin whore. I have given the king all the sons he will have from me. I will not share his bed again, ever. He will be told that if he seeks to force me to his bed or replace me as queen, we have retained the services of a wet boy to make sure he finds an early grave. The fact is, Logan, if you say yes, you will one day be king.
Logan said nothing.
Most men would leap at the chance for such power. Of course, most men make terrible kings. We know you wouldn't ask for this, but you aren't only the right man for it, you're the only man for it.
Logan was the name Regnus and I had decided on for our first son. I know what I'm asking, Logan. And I'm asking.
The game wasn't going well. The pieces were spread out before Dorian-like armies, except that they weren't like armies. They were armies. Though in this game, few of the soldiers wore uniforms. Even those who did moved with reluctance. The fool king shamed the commander. The reluctant king was kneeling somewhere at this moment. The mage in secret's secret had split him from the king who might have been. The shadow that walks and the courtesan couldn't decide which side they were on. The rent boy was moving fast, but too slow, too slow. The Prince of Rats had marshaled his vermin, and they would rise from the warrens, a tide of human filth. Even the rogue prince and the blacksmith might play a part, if...
Blast!
It was hard enough just envisioning the pieces as they were. From there, he could often focus on one piece and see the choices it faced. the commander as a drunk king shouted in his face, the shadow that walks as he faced the apprentice in a honeymoon chamber. But just as he was fixing the pieces in space, setting their relative positions, he'd started seeing one or more at a different time. Seeing where the blacksmith would be in 17 years, stooped over a forge, urging his son back to work, didn't do him any good in figuring out how to keep fear alive until that day. He went back to work.
Now, where is the kidnapped?
Sometimes he felt as if he were but a breath of wind over the field of battle. He could see everything, but the most he could hope to do was blow one or two killing arrows off course.
Where is that mage in secret? Open the door, quick!
Fear looked up from the little table where he was seated. They were in a small house they'd rented off Seidlin, where Dorian said they would be left alone. A man was just disappearing past it, walking determinedly down the street. His hair and gait were familiar. He must have seen something out of the corner of his eye. Of course, the blonde mountain that was Fear was hard to miss, because he turned on his heel, his hand dropping to his sword.
Fear?
Fear looked almost as surprised as Solon was.
Both of you, inside. Dorian, you can see the future, yet you never see fit to tell me anything.
So much to see, so much to know. It was easy to miss things right under your nose.
Dorian!
Solon embraced his old friend.
I ought to wring your neck! Do you know how much trouble your little Lord Gaia bit cost me?
Oh, my friend, you did well.
You look well, too. You were fat when you left. Look at you now. A decade of military service has done you right.
Solon smiled, but the smile faded fast.
Torian, seriously, I have to know. Did you mean that I needed to come serve Logan, or did you mean Regnus? I thought you'd said Lord Gaia and not Duke Gaia. But when I got here, there were two Lords Gaia. Did I do the right thing?
Yes, yes. They both needed you, and you saved both of them several times. Some you know, some you don't.
Perhaps the most important thing Solon had done was something he would never appreciate. He had encouraged Logan's friendship with Kyler.
But I won't lie to you. Keeping your secret was something I didn't foresee. I thought you would have shared it years ago. Down most paths, I see now, Regnus Gaer will lose his life.
I'm a coward.
Pah! You're many things, Solon, but you're not a coward.
Dorian kept silent and let his eyes speak empathy. He knew differently. Solon's silence had been cowardice. Dozens of times he'd tried to speak, but he could never summon the courage to risk his friendship with Regnus Gaer. The worst of it was that Regnus would have understood and laughed about it if he'd heard it from Solon's own lips. But discovering deceit in a friend felt like betrayal to a man who'd had his fiancée sold out from under him to another man.
Your powers have grown.
Yes, he's truly insufferable now.
I'm surprised the brothers at Shokendi let you come here.
Dorian and Fear looked at each other.
You left without permission?
Silence.
You left against their direct orders?
Worse.
Fear's laughter told Solon he'd been put into another plan of Dorian's that he couldn't believe.
What did you do?
It belonged to us, really. We were the ones who found it again. They didn't have any right.
You didn't.
Dorian shrugged.
Where is it?
From the bland looks on their faces, he knew.
You brought it here?
Fear walked to the little bed and threw back the blankets. Kurok lay sheathed on the bed. The scabbard was white leather, inlaid with gold Hyrillic script and capped with gold.
That's not the original scabbard, surely.
It's work like this that makes me want to never be a swordsmith. The scabbard is the original, woven thick with magic as fine as Gandian silk. And I think all that's just to preserve the leather. It won't stay dirty, won't take a mark. The gold inlay is real, too. Pure gold, hardened to where it would stand against iron or even steel. If I could figure out that technique alone, my heirs would be rich to the 12th generation.
We've barely dared unsheath the sword, and of course we haven't tried to use it.
I should hope not. Dorian, why would you bring it here? Have you seen something?
No. Artifacts of such power skew my vision. They themselves and the lusts they invoke are so intense that it fogs my sight.
Suddenly, he was drifting again. But drifting was too gentle a word for it. His vision latched onto Solon, and images streamed past him. Impossible visions.
Solon against incredible odds. Solon is a white-haired old man, except not old. Blast! The image disappeared before he could understand it. Solon. 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 Solon dies. Solon killing. Solon on a storm-tossed ship. Solon saving Regnus from a wet boy.
Solon!
Solon killing the king. Solon dooming Sonaria. Solon propelling Dorian into Kalidor. A beautiful woman in a chamber of 100 portraits of beautiful women. Janine. Dorian's heart lurched. Garoth or Sul?
It's getting worse as you get stronger, isn't it?
He trades his mind for the visions. He won't listen to me.
My sanity isn't necessary for the work I must do. My visions are.
The dice were in his hand. Not just two dice. A whole handful of dice, each with a dozen faces.
How many 12s can I throw?
He would be throwing blind. He could see that Solon already was thinking he should leave, that no matter how good it was to see his old friends, he had to try to save Regnus Geyer. But Dorian had a feeling. That was the damnable thing. Sometimes it was as logical as a sesh game. Sometimes it was just an itch.
Anyway, where were we? Fear doesn't have enough talent to use Kurak. If he tried, he'd either burn or explode. No offense, friend. You have finer control than either of us. I could use it, but only safely as a Meister. My mage powers probably aren't strong enough. Of course, using it with Evir would be a total disaster. I don't even know what I'd do. Of us, Solon, you're the only mage in the room, or the country for that matter, who could hope to even hold it without dying. Though it would be a near thing. You'd die if you tried to use more than a fraction of its power.
Dorian gazed into space as if he were suddenly caught by another vision. The line was set.
Surely you didn't bring it all this way for nothing.
Set and sprung.
No, we had to get it away from the brothers. It was our only chance. If we'd waited until after we returned, they would have known they couldn't trust us. It would have been kept far from us.
Dorian, you still believe in that one god of yours, don't you?
I think he sometimes confuses himself with him.
Fear's remark was uncharacteristically bitter, and it struck Dorian deeply. It hurt because it was deserved. He was doing it right now.
Fear's right. Solon, I was setting you up to take the sword. I shouldn't treat you that way. You deserve better, and I'm sorry.
Damn! You knew I was thinking of taking it?
Yes. I don't know if it's the right thing or not. I didn't know you'd walk in our door until a second before you did. With Kurak, everything gets twisted. If you use it, Kalidor may well take it from us. That would be a disaster far greater than losing your friend Regnus, or even losing this entire country.
The risk is unacceptable.
What good does it do anyone if we don't use it?
It keeps it out of the hands of the Vordmeisters. That's good enough. There's only a handful of mages in the world who could hold Kurak without dying, and you know it. We also know that there are dozens of Vordmeisters who could. With Kurak in their hands, what could stop them?
I have a feeling about this. Maybe the god is nudging me. I just think it's right. I feel like it's connected to the Guardian of Light.
I thought you'd given up on those old prophecies.
If you take Kurak, the Guardian will be born in our lifetimes. I've been living so long saying I had faith, but it isn't really faith when you just do what you see, is it? I think the god wants us to take this crazy risk. I think he'll bring good out of it.
Dorian, the god is always your out. You run into a wall rationally and you say the god is speaking to you. It's ridiculous. If this god of yours created everything like you say, he also gave us reason, right? Why the hell would he make us do something so irrational?
I'm right.
Dorian, can I really use it?
If you use it, everyone in 50 miles will know it. Maybe even the ungifted. You run all the normal risks of drawing too much power, but your upper limit is higher than its lowest threshold. Things are happening too fast for me to see too much, but I'm going to tell you this, Sullen. The invasion force was headed for Modai, until Kyler didn't kill Durzo Blint. So they were prepared for a different kind of war. The boats arrive tonight. They have 60 Meisters.
60? That's more than some of our schools.
There are at least 3 Werdermeisters capable of calling forth pitworms.
You're mad. Dorian, we need to leave. This kingdom's doomed. They'll capture Korok, they'll capture you, and then what hope will the rest of the world have? We need to pick a battle we can win.
Unless the god is with us, we won't win any battles, Fear.
Don't give me that god bullshit! I won't let Solon take Korok, and I'm taking you back to Sho Kendi. Your madness is taking you.
Too late.
Solon scooped up the sword from the bed.
We both know I can take that away from you.
In a sword fight, sure. But if you try to take it, I'll just draw power through it and stop you. Like Dorian said, every Meister within 50 miles will know we have an artifact here, and they'll all come looking for it.
You wouldn't.
I will do it. I've given 10 years of my life for this backwater, and they've been good years. It's been damn good to stand for something rather than just watch from the side and criticize everyone who's actually doing something. You should try it. You used to, you know. What happened to the Fir Kusat who went and took his sword in the first place? I'm going to do something here. Don't spoil my chance to make it be useful. Come on, Fear. If we can fight Kalidor, how could we not?
Oh, once you make your mind up, you're about as easy to move as Dorian.
Thank you.
He didn't mean it as a compliment.
The man who had ordered soldiers to arrest Regnus hadn't been much use. They'd captured him coming out of an inn after lunch. His interrogation had been short, if not kind. He'd given them his commanding officer's name, one Thaddeus Blatt. Thaddeus Blatt was currently being entertained upstairs in a brothel called the Winking Wench. Regnus and his men were waiting downstairs, seated at various tables, and not doing a good job of remaining inconspicuous. It all made Regnus nervous. He didn't know this man, but soldiers tended to visit brothels in the middle of the afternoon only when they knew something big was going to happen. Something from which they might not return. He also didn't like being out in public. Years ago, he wouldn't have been able to go anywhere without people recognizing his face. He had been presumed to be the next king, after all. But that had been years ago. Few people looked at him twice now. He was a big, threatening man in the Warrens. Apparently, that outweighed the fact that he was a rich nobleman in the Warrens. Finally, the man came downstairs. He was swarthy, with a single, thick, black eyebrow, and a face etched with a permanent glower. Regnus stood after the man walked past and followed him to the stable. They'd already paid the stable boy to abandon his post, and by the time Regnus got there, Thaddeus Blatt was bleeding from his nose and the corner of his mouth, disarmed, held by 4 soldiers.
You bloody goddamn cretin! I'll kill you! Let me go, damn you!
That's not what I want to hear coming out of your mouth, Lieutenant.
He gestured, and the men kicked the back of Blatt's knees so he dropped in front of the trough. Regnus grabbed a handful of hair and pressed his head underwater.
Tie his hands. This may take a few minutes.
The soldiers bound his hands in short order.
Damn you, Kaya!
Slow learner. When they stop fighting, it means they understand for the first time that they might actually die unless they really concentrate. I think you would be a little more polite this time.
Who are you?
I'm Duke Regnus Geyer, and you're going to tell me everything you know about my people's death.
Bugger off!
I'm running out of time, Thaddeus Blatt, and I've got nothing to lose by killing you. I've already killed my wife and all my servants, remember? So if I have to put your face under that water one more time, I'm going to hold it there until you are dead.
They don't tell me anything! No! Wait! I swear! I don't get any new orders until tonight! But this one goes all the way to the top. To the top of the keen, you know?
The Sakage?
Yeah.
Not good enough. Sorry. You set a limit, and then you break it. Most people can hold out if they've been given a limit. They tell themselves, I can hold out that long. Do you think of anything else?
Sir, if you don't mind my asking, how do you know all this?
I got captured by the Lycanoth during a border raid when I was young. But we don't have the time to use everything I learned from them.
Wait! I overheard them saying that Hugh Gibbard's next dinner was the queen and her daughters. That's all I know! God, that's all I know! He's going to kill them tonight in the queen's chambers after the banquet. Please don't kill me! I swear that's all I know!
They had promised Caldrosa Wynn a man of war and put her on a sea cow instead. The Sethi pirate hadn't been able to say no to the money.
Damn the mother who whelped me. Why didn't I say no?
Looking over the port side, men scurried to adjust the sails to catch another cupful of wind. Sails? Bedsheets, more like. The sails were too small. The ship and its sister were too fat and ungainly to outrun a rowboat piloted by a one-handed monkey. In short, the Cenarian warships would be on them in minutes, and there wasn't a damn thing Caldrosa Wynn could do about it.
If you're going to do something, now might be a good time.
Wench! No one tells a meister his work. Understood?
The leader of the witch's eyes didn't rise from her bare breasts until the last word.
Then to hell with you!
Caldrosa spat over the side, not betraying the queasiness that rose in her at the touch of that witch's eyes. The bastards had been staring at her breasts for the entire trip. Normally, around foreigners, she'd have covered herself, but she liked making the Caladorans uncomfortable. Witches were another matter. Caldrosa reefed the sails and had the men below deck start rowing, but even that was hopeless. Caladoran craftsmanship. They'd even designed the oars poorly. They were too short. Even with the hundreds of men she was carrying, she couldn't translate their strength into speed because not enough men could man the oars at once, nor was there room below for full sweep. She cursed her greed and the witches. In minutes, the three Cenarian warships were on them. It was a shame. In all the ocean, Cenaria couldn't have had more than a dozen ships in her navy, and Caldrosa had found the three best ships of it. In her Sparrowhawk or any Sethi ship with a Sethi crew, she'd be safe. The witches finally stood as the first Cenarian ship drew within 100 paces. They were going to ram her sea cow at an angle and shear off the oars. 80 paces. 70. 50. 30. The witches had their hands twined. Suddenly, it seemed darker on deck than it had been a moment before, but nothing was happening.
Damn you, do something!
Out of the corner of her eye, she thought she saw something immense pass by under the ship. She turned to brace for the impact, but instead only got a face full of water. When Caldrosa's vision cleared, she saw pieces of the Cenarian ship flying through the air, but not many pieces. Not enough to account for an entire ship. Then she saw the rest of the ship through the shallow blue waters. Somehow, it had been sucked down in an instant. The flying pieces were merely what had broken off the decks and the sails as the water broke over the ship. The sea went black, as if a thick cloud had passed in front of the sun. But it undulated. It took Caldrosa a moment to realize that something enormous was passing beneath her ship. Something absolutely immense.
No Sprecor, Valigis Leviathan, friend or
more than their hands had twined down. It seemed as if the black tattoos all of them wore had torn free of their hands and were holding each other, pulsing with power. The witches were sweating as if under tremendous strain. Water swelled as if an immense arrow were passing just under the surface of the sea and then stopped as it reached the second Cenarian warship. The men on its deck, 50 paces away, were shooting arrows into the water, brandishing swords, the captain trying to turn the ship. For 5 seconds, nothing happened. Then, two gray, massive something slapped against the Cenarian ship's deck. They were too big for Caldrosa to even guess what they could be for a moment. Each one covered nearly a quarter of the ship's hull. then, the ship bounded 10 paces out of the sea, straight up, and Caldrosa saw that they were fingers of a massive gray hand. Then the hand went down and the entire ship disappeared under the waves. Then, the black shape was moving again. It was too big to be real, and this time the men on the last Cenarian ship were frantically moving about. The ship drifted, even though it had closed the distance with her sea cow while the other ships had been being destroyed, and was now almost touching it. The sea swelled again, but this time there was no pause. The Leviathan swam beneath the Cenarian ship at incredible speed, rising high enough in the water that spines from its back rose 30 feet in the air. The spines cut the ship in half, and two flicks of a gray tail smashed each half into the ocean. Suddenly, the cheering stopped, and the soldiers were pointing. She followed their gaze and saw that swell rising again, this time pointing straight for them. The witches were sweating freely, open panic on their faces.
No, that won't work. Like this.
Something rippled out from the witches toward the Leviathan. It met the oncoming beast, and nothing happened. Then, the huge shape turned and went out to sea. The witches collapsed on the deck, but something wasn't finished. Caldrosa saw that immediately. They stared hard at the young man who, if Caldrosa guessed correctly, had taken control and saved all of their lives. The young man shook his head, staring at the deck.
Obedience unto death.
Your fate is decided.
The other 11 witches gathered around the two men. They laid their hands on the young man who saved them, and Caldrosa saw his tattoos rise from below his skin. They swam and swelled until his arms were black, and then they burst. Not out, but away from the witch's body, but in, as if they were veins that had been overfilled and now leaked through the rest of his body. The ruptured tattoos bled beneath the young man's skin, and he collapsed to the deck, twitching violently. Everyone else on the ship was studiously ignoring the witches. Caldrosa found herself the only one watching the exchange.
Get rid of it. Remove it from my sight.
The other witches tossed the corpse overboard. Then the leader turned and watched Caldrosa with two blue eyes.
Never again. Never again.
Do you know the secret of effective blackmail, Durzo?
Roth was seated at a fine oak table incongruously placed in a typical Warren's hovel. Durzo stood before him like a chastened courtier standing before the king. Roth's chair was even raised. The presumption.
Yes.
Durzo wasn't in any mood for games.
Refresh me.
Durzo cursed himself and cursed fate. He'd done everything to avert this, paid every price of misery, and yet it had come.
Use your hold to get a better hold.
You've made that difficult for me, Durzo. You've convinced everyone that you don't give a damn about anything.
Thank you.
The problem is, I'm more clever than you are.
Cleverer?
Roth's close-set eyes narrowed at Blint's blithe monotone. Roth was a lean young man with an angular face obscured by an oiled black goatee and long hair. He disliked making words for their own sake. He disliked people. He stuck out an open hand, waited. Durzo tossed him the bit of pretty silver glass. Roth looked at it briefly and threw it back, unamused.
Don't toy with me, assassin. I know there was a real one there. We have two spies who saw someone bond it.
Then they should have told you someone got there first.
Really?
Really.
Then I think it's time for you to meet another of my cards.
There was no signal that Durzo could see, but an old man stepped into the hovel instantly. The creature was short and bent still further by more years than a mortal frame could endure. He had piercing blue eyes and a fringe of silver hair combed over a bald dome of head. The man gave a toothless grin.
I am Wurdmeister Nefdada, counselor and seer to his majesty.
A Wurdmeister. Durzo Blint felt old.
How exalted. I thought you called your Dog Kings His Holiness.
His Majesty Roth Ursul, Ninth Aetheling of the God King.
By the Night Angels.
Nefdada grabbed Durzo's chin with a frail hand and pulled it down toward himself until Durzo looked into his eyes.
He knows who took the Globe of Edges.
There was no denying it. Not with a Wurdmeister here. Wurdmeisters were supposed to be able to read minds. It wasn't true, but it was close enough. Most of them couldn't do it, Durzo knew. Even those who could didn't actually read minds. The way Durzo had heard it explained, longer ago than he liked to remember, was that they could see hints of images that their subjects had seen. The best Wurdmeisters could intuit a lot of truth from a few images, though. It was almost the same thing at this point.
How can I take advantage of the difference between what I've seen and what I know? It was my apprentice.
Roth Ursul raised an eyebrow.
He doesn't know what it is. I don't know who sent him. He never does jobs without telling me.
Perhaps you should not be so sure of this.
I'll get the Kakari for you. I just need more time.
Kakari?
Roth had never used the word. It was a stupid mistake. Totally uncharacteristic. Durzo was falling apart.
The Globe of Edges.
I've given you a chance to be honest with me, Durzo. So what I'm going to do is your own fault.
Roth motioned to one of the guards at the entrance to the hovel.
The girl!
Several moments later, a little girl was carried in. She was drugged, whether chemically or magically. She was maybe 11 years old, skinny and dirty, but not the skinny and dirty of a street rat. Healthy skinny. Healthy dirty. Her black hair was long and curly, and her face had the same angelic, demonic cast that her mother's had had. She would be even prettier than Vonda someday. She took her height from Durzo, but, thank the gods, everything else from her mother. Yuli was a damn fine-looking kid. It was the first time Durzo had seen his daughter. It made him ache somewhere that was already sore.
You've already chosen not to cooperate enthusiastically, Durzo. So usually I'd make an example of you. We both know I can't do that. I need you too much. At least for the next few days. So maybe I should, say, cut off her hand as a warning. And let the little girl know that it's because you won't stop it. That you are choosing to hurt her. Perhaps something like that would help gain your cooperation.
Durzo was frozen. Just looking at his daughter. His daughter. How had he put her in the hands of this man? She had been the king's leverage, and Roth had taken her right out from under the man's nose.
How about this? We'll cut off a hand, or you cut off a finger.
There was a way out. Even now, there was a way out. One of his knives was poisoned. He'd put the asp poison on it. It would be painless. Especially for such a small person. She'd be dead in seconds. Maybe Roth would be surprised enough that Durzo would get away. Maybe. He could kill his daughter and probably be killed himself and Kyla would live. Or this Roth Ursul would demand he kill Kyler and get the Kakari. That would have been easy enough to fake if Roth didn't have a Wurdmeister. Could he kill his own daughter? He'd be letting them kill Kyler if he didn't.
She didn't do anything.
Spare me! You've got too much blood on your hands to cry about the suffering of innocence.
Hurting her isn't necessary.
You know, from anyone else, I'd laugh. Do you remember what happened the last time you called an Ursul's bluff?
Durzo couldn't keep his expression blank. Grief flashed through him.
Who'd have thought? My father takes the mother, and I take the daughter. Have you learned your lesson, Durzo Blint? I think you have. My father will be pleased that I'm closing the circle. He tried to blackmail you for a false Kakari and failed. I'll blackmail you for a true Kakari and succeed. Here's how blackmail is going to work for you, Durzo Blint. If I think you're resisting me, your daughter will die. And there are other, shall we say, indignities that she will suffer first.
Let your imagination work on what those might be. I know I'll let mine. She'll be a husk by the time we're finished. I will spend months eking out every drop of suffering from her mind and body before we kill her. And I enjoy such work. I am one of Kali's most dedicated disciples. Do you understand me, Blint? Am I being clear?
Perfectly.
Durzo's jaw was tense. He couldn't kill her. By the Night Angels, he just couldn't do it. He'd think of something. He always had before. There was some way out of this. He would find it, and he would kill both of these men.
Now, tell me everything about this apprentice of yours. And I mean everything.
Kyler stepped out of the shadows of the Blue Boar's office and grabbed Jarl around the throat with his arm, putting a hand on his mouth.
Quiet. It's me.
Wary of Jarl shouting, he released his friend slowly.
Damn, Kyler. Take it easy. How did you get in here?
I need your help.
I'll say. I was just going to come looking for you.
What?
Look in the top drawer. You can read it as fast as I could tell you.
Kyler read the note. Roth was Roth Ursul, a Kaladoran prince. He'd just been elected Shinga. Kyler was a suspect in the prince's murder. The king's men were looking for him. Kyler tossed the note aside.
I need your help. Just one more time, Jarl.
Are you telling me you knew all that?
It doesn't change anything. I need your help.
Is this going to get me killed?
I need to know where Mama Kay is hiding.
Do I need to ask why?
I'm going to kill her.
After all she's done for you, you...
She betrayed me, Jarl, and you know it. She manipulated me into trying to kill Durzo Blint. She's so good, I thought it was my own idea.
Maybe you should get her story before you kill her. Maybe murder shouldn't be your first resort against the people who've helped
you. She convinced me that to save a friend, I had to kill Hugh Gibbet. Except that it wasn't Hugh. It was Durzo. She betrayed us. She made me ruin a friend and take away everything he loves.
I'm sorry, but I can't help you.
I'm not asking.
Are you going to beat it out of me?
I'll do what I have to do.
She's hiding out. She had a terrible fight with Blint not long ago. I don't know what it was about, but she's helped me, and I won't betray her.
You know she'd give you up in a second, Jarl.
I know. I might sell my body, Kyler, but I do what I can to keep the rest of me. I've only got a few shreds of dignity left. If you take those, you won't just be killing Mama Kay.
It's one thing to say you'll keep a secret to the death. It's quite another to go through with it. I've never tortured anyone, Jarl, but I know how.
If you were going to torture me, you'd already have started, my friend.
They stared at each other until Kyler looked away, defeated.
If you need help with anything else, I'll do it, Kyler. I hope you know that.
I do. Just be ready, Jarl. Things are going to happen faster than anyone expects.
Yes?
A bodyguard poked his bald head in.
Durzo Blint to see you, sir.
Kyler tried to draw on his talent to cloak himself in shadows the way he had done when he came into the Blue Boar. Nothing happened.
Oh, shit.
Kyler practically dived behind Jarl's desk.
Sir?
The bodyguard couldn't see Kyler through the crack of the door he had opened.
Show him in.
I won't waste your time or mine. I know you're Kyler's friend.
Yes?
I want you to get a message to him as soon as possible. I already sent him the message, but I need to make sure he gets it. I'll be at the Tipsy Tart. I'll be there for the next 2 hours. Tell him it's Arutero.
Let me write that down.
Get it to him fast, Rent Boy. It's important. I'll hold you responsible if he doesn't get it.
You were under the desk?
Can't always be fancy.
You're unbelievable. What does Arutero mean?
Bloodless. It means we don't kill each other while we're meeting.
And you trust him? After you tried to kill him last night?
Blint will kill me, but he'll do it professionally. He thinks I deserve that much. Mind if I use your window? I have a lot to do before I see him.
Help yourself.
Kyler threw open the window, then turned to his friend.
I'm sorry. I had to try. I have to kill her, and you were the fastest way to find her.
I'm sorry I couldn't help.
Crawling out the window, Kyler moved out of Jarl's line of sight, then tried to draw the shadows again. This time it worked easily.
Perfect.
He couldn't even tell what he had done differently from what he did in the office. Kyler figured that learning to control his talent would have been hard enough if he had had Durzo to explain it to him. Figuring it out on his own would be well nigh impossible. He moved back to the window. After a minute, Jarl checked the window, then walked to his desk and scrawled a quick note. He summoned a boy to his office and handed him the note. Kyler circled around the building and followed the boy after he came out a side door. He'd known Jarl wouldn't tell him, and he hoped his friend never figured out that Kyler had used him anyway. The messenger boys were of uneven quality. Some of them made their passes so well that Kyler could barely follow them. Others simply held the letter out to the next boy. It took a half hour for them to get to a small house on the east side. Kyler recognized the guard who took the message from the last boy. He was a Yumuri with almond-shaped eyes and straight black hair. Kyler had seen the man at Mama Kay's house before. It was good enough. Mama Kay was here. Kyler would deal with her later. He headed to the Tipsy Tart. Durzo Blint was seated against a wall with a wrapped bundle on the table. Kyler joined him, removed the sash from his waist, and each of his weapons in it. The dagger and wakasaji that had been tucked into the sash, the Karen hand and a half sword across his back, two daggers from his sleeves, throwing knives and darts from his waistband, and a tanto from one boot.
That all?
Kyler rolled up the sash and set it beside Blint's, which was just as large.
Looks like we'll both be working soon.
Blint nodded and set down a mug of a foul Ledeshian stout exactly in the center of a board so that it didn't cross any of the cracks.
You wanted to speak with me?
Kyler was wondering why Blint was drinking. Blint never drank when he had to work.
They have my daughter. They made threats. Credible threats. This Roth is a real twist.
They'll kill her if you don't give them the Kakari.
Blint only drank in response.
So you have to kill me?
Blint stared him in the eye. It was a yes.
Is it just the job? Or did I fail?
Fail? A lot of wet boys go through what we call the crucible. Sometimes it's designed deliberately for journeymen wet boys who have some serious problem. Anything that hinders a gifted apprentice from becoming a gifted wet boy. Sometimes it happens to a wet boy after he's a master. It's one of the reasons there are so few old wet boys. My crucible was Vonda, Guinevere's little sister. We thought we were in love. We thought certain realities didn't apply to us. I became a wet boy with an obvious weakness, and Gareth Ursul kidnapped her. He was looking for a Kakari, as he still is. So was I.
I don't know what all it does. I can't even use my talent all the time. Can I use the Kakari when I don't even have it in my possession?
Stop interrupting. This story has a point, and you should know better than to expect me to give you a tutorial on the very day I'm going to have to kill you. Suffice it to say that the power of a Kakari is vast. I'd been working for years to get one. Gareth Ursul had been doing the same. He thought a Kakari would give him an edge over the princes and the Vordmeisters so he could become God King. So he took Vonda and told me where he was holding her and told me that if I went for the Kakari, he'd kill her.
You've never done well with threats.
I think I've always done well with them. The thing was, there was going to be a limited time to get the Kakari. The man who had allegedly bonded the Kakari was on his deathbed. So the time to get it would be immediately after he died. Naturally, Gareth had Vonda held way outside of town. I knew that the Sakage was going to poison the man that night. I guess that Gareth knew it too. I couldn't be two places at once, so I had to make a choice. I knew Gareth Ursul. He's a master of traps. He's smarter than I am, more devious. So I guess that if I went for Vonda, either the traps or meisters of his would kill me. I knew of one trap he'd used before that would use my entrance as a trap's trigger that would kill her. That was like him, turning my attempt to save Vonda into the very thing that killed her. Getting the Kakari would just make a sweet deal sweeter for him. That was my crucible, Kyla. Would I fling myself into a trap in an attempt to be a hero? Or would I use my mind, give up Vonda for lost, and get the Kokari?
You chose the Kokari.
It was a fake. Afterward, I sprinted, stole a horse, ran into death. But it was half an hour after dawn when I got to the house where Vonda was. She was dead. I checked all the windows, but couldn't find any sign of a trap. I'll never know if it's because he had someone remove them, or if they were purely magical, or if there never were any traps at all. The bastard. He did it on purpose. I'm a wet boy, and love is a noose. The only way to redeem my choice was to become the best wet boy ever.
Kyler felt a lump in his throat.
That's why we can't have love, Kyla. That's why I did everything I could to keep you out of it. I made one mistake. Let myself be weak one time. And now, after all these years, it's come back to haunt me. You're not going to die because you failed, Kyla. You'll die because I did. That's the way things work. Others always pay for my failures. I failed, Kyla, because I thought you only go through the Crucible once. I was wrong. Life is the Crucible.
From what Kyla could see, Durzo's choice had never stopped haunting him. The man was a shell. He was a legendary wet boy, but he'd sacrificed everything to that god. Kyler had always wanted to be Durzo, had always held his skills in awe. Durzo was the best, but where was the man beneath the legend?
So my crucible was Eileen. There's no way you'll fight with me against them?
And let Roth torture and kill my daughter? Here's my choices, kid. You die, or my daughter dies.
Durzo pulled a gold Gunder from a pouch.
Crowns Roth wins, castles I lose.
The coin bounced on the table and, impossibly, landed on Edge.
There's always another choice.
Kyler slowly released his talent.
I worked for almost 15 years to get the Globe of Edges, Kyla. I didn't know where it was. I didn't know if it was bonded to someone. I didn't know what kind of magical defenses protected it. I knew people like you were supposed to call the Kokari, and that your need for it would make the call stronger. That's why I took you on jobs in every corner of the city. How could I have known King Gunder had it and thought it was just jewelry? No one talked about it because no one knew it was special. No one cared. And I thought maybe I was wrong, that you just had a block, that if I pushed you enough, you'd use your talent. After working for 15 years, you think it'd be easy to just hand it over. You think it's easy to give away 15 years of your life.
But you were going to.
Hell no. Once I had it, I'd never have given it away.
Kylo didn't believe him. Blint had been planning to give him the Kokari all along, until Roth.
Master, work with me. Together we can take Roth.
You know, I used to be like you, kid, for a long time. You should have known me back then. You would have liked me. We might have been friends. Roth's a Caladoran prince, kid. He's got a Vordmeister. Soon he'll have more witches than all the Southlands have mages and an army to boot. He owns the Sakage. There's no hope. There's no way to oppose him now. The Night Angels themselves wouldn't try.
Here I thought they were invincible.
They're immortal. It's not the same thing. You can take what you need from my place. I wouldn't want you to die just because I've got better gear.
I won't fight you, Master.
You'll fight. You'll die. And I'll miss you.
Master Blind, what does my name mean?
Kyla. You know the word cleave.
To cut, right? Like a meat cleaver.
Yes, but it has another meaning, too. In old wedding ceremonies, a husband and wife were commanded to cleave together.
Like cleavage?
Right. Cleave means both to come together and to split apart. Two opposite meanings. Your name's like that. It means one who kills and one who is killed.
I don't understand.
You will. May the Night Angels watch over you, kid. Remember, they have three faces.
What?
Vengeance, justice, and mercy. They always know which to show. And remember the difference between vengeance and revenge. Now get out of here.
Kylo stood and stashed his weapons expertly. His hips brushed the table as he stood, and the balanced coin wobbled and fell before he could reach out with his talent again and stop it. He ignored it, refused to see it as an omen.
Master Blint, Hikaramu Lodok, thank you for everything.
Thank you.
Durzo picked up the coin. It was Castle's.
Castle's I lose. Thank you. You always were the damnedest kid.
Kyler had an hour before Durzo came after him. He knew that because he watched Durzo drink a full mug of stout, and Durzo Blint wouldn't work when he had alcohol in him. It was the perfect time to go to Master Blint's safe house. He might get lucky and be able to figure out how Master Blint intended to kill him from what tools were missing. To be careful, he used the back alleys to get to the safe house. In short order, Kyler disarmed the trap on the lock, then searched for the second trap. If he'd been fully visible, he would have felt exposed, but his talent obeyed him this time and covered him with shadows. He still had no idea how well he was concealed, but in the heavily shadowed and rarely traveled street, he felt comfortable taking his time. The second trap was embedded in the doorframe opposite the latch. Kylo shook his head, and Blint said he was no good at traps. Setting a trap, which used the release of pressure from the bolt itself for a trigger, was no easy feat. Having disarmed that trap, Kylo started picking the lock. Kylo didn't have to fumble with a rake. He'd practiced on this door for years, so he pressed the tumbler in place almost instantly. Then he felt something wrong. He threw his fingers apart and dropped the rake just as the spring released. A black needle darted out between his spread fingers, grazing his knuckle and almost breaking the skin. The black compound on the needle was henbane and kinderperil. It wouldn't have been fatal, but it would make a person ill for days, and he wouldn't have had time to get far before the poison did its work on him. It was a nasty bit of business, and its presence meant that Master Blint was still testing him. This safe house wasn't as spacious as the one where he'd spent his first months with Master Blint, and with the animals in it, it had been terribly smelly and dirty. Now the animals were gone. Kyler scowled. A cursory examination told him they'd been here this morning. Moving further in, Kyler saw a letter sitting on Durzo's desk. He drew a knife in each hand and opened the letter without touching it. He doubted Durzo would use a contact poison in the paper, but he hadn't thought the wet boy would put a third trap on the door either.
Kyler, relax. Killing you with contact poison would be terribly unsatisfying. I'm glad the third trap didn't get you. But if you had used what you thought you knew about me instead of checking, you'd have deserved it. I'll miss you. You're the closest to family I'll ever have. I'm sorry I brought you into this life. Mama Kay and I did everything we could to make you a wet boy. I suppose it's to your credit that we failed. You mean more to me than I ever thought another person could.
Kyler blinked back tears. There was no way he could kill the man who'd written this. Durzo Blint was more than his master. He was his father.
Tonight it ends. If you want to save your friend, you'd better find me A. Thorn.
A. Thorn?
Well, Blint was certainly prickly enough to call himself a thorn, but he was also usually a good speller. And what did he mean about saving my friend? Did Durzo know where Aline was? Why was he threatening her? Or was he talking about Jarl? The blood drained from Kyler's face. The animals were gone. Everything else Blint owned was still here, so he wasn't moving. The animals would look fine to a cook, and the taste tester who tried the foods wouldn't be affected for hours, long enough for the foods to be served at a dinner. Blint only drank after he finished a job. The animals were gone. All of them. There weren't many places that could take all of them.
Oh, shit.
Blint was poisoning the nobles at the Midsummer's banquet. Aline wouldn't be there, of course. Neither would Jarl. Blint must have known something he didn't. It must mean that Logan would be there.
Roth is attempting his coup. Tonight.
Kyler felt dizzy. He threw a hand down on the table to steady himself. his eyes raised to one he'd stared at for years. The asp poison was there. It was low. Blint had really meant the threats. For a while after talking with him at the Arateru, after seeing the letter, Kyla might have thought Blint wouldn't kill him, but he would. It was all professional for Blint. He'd crossed a line years ago when he let Vonda die, and there was no going back. It was classic Durzo Blint. He was giving Kyla a chance now, giving him enough information so that he would show up, enough motivation so he'd fight, but when it came to the fight, Blint would do everything in his power to win. He always had. Kyla's body knew what to do, even though his mind was far away. He threaded cotton through the tiny holes on a tiny poisonous knife and dripped asp venom on it. Logan didn't like rabbit, so Kyla prepared the antidotes for the poisons they'd fed the pheasants and starlings and hoped that Logan didn't touch the pork. Alone, it wouldn't be fatal, but there was no antidote for it. If Logan got really sick, there was no way Kyla could carry him. He scoured his body without soap so as to have as little scent as possible. He strapped knives to his bare forearms and a tanto to one calf, pulled on his trousers and tunic, both tight, mottled black, made of Gandian cotton. Buckled his weapons harness, checked the belt for his poisons and grappling hooks, slid home the poisonous knife in its special sheath, slapped home daggers and his current hand and a half sword. Then he saw retribution. Blint had left the big black sword on the wall. He'd left his favorite sword for Kyla. Doubtless he'd made some quip about either taking it off his body or, if things went the other way, not needing it anymore.
He really means it. This is really to the death.
Kyla lifted the sword reverently and strapped it to his back. It was heavier than he was used to using, but with his talent, it would be perfect. Finally ready, he walked to the door and stopped. He put his head against the wood.
How has it come to this?
Tonight, either he or Master Blint would die. Kyla didn't even know what he was going to do when he got to the castle. But if he did do something, Logan would die.